Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today.
Today we are going to be talking about life after death. What do we know about heaven? What do we fear? What do we think about when it comes to that time when it's time to check out or pass over or walk through the lights or what's heaven all about? You know, I had somebody ask me the other day if I was spiritual or religious. And I went, what? Something that doesn't even register in my mind, I guess. And they said, well, you know, another person said, this is my life today. You know, this is what my life is all about. And it's going to end and that'll be it. And is that really true? You know, that we've spoken about spirituality, life after death, or life as a continuum, and death is just the death of your physical body. And how about all those discussions? Today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Elisa Madhus. Yes, that's right. And she's going to be sharing a memoir from heaven from her son, Eric. The name of the book is My Life After Death. Dr. Elisa, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Dr. Jeanette, thank you so much for having me.
You know, I'll tell you, I'm so happy that you're here because I think a lot of people are having so many different thoughts these days. I think we're really expanding in our ideas about life, death, the afterlife, heaven, our choices here, and spirituality. And, you know, as the Internet has expanded, so too have our thoughts have expanded. So maybe we could say maybe there is something else out there. You know, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. All I knew about life and death and heaven was what I read at the corner library and the books that were ancient old. So don't you think that the world has really been changing? So we're now open to listening about these concepts?
Oh, I definitely agree. Plus, we're like, what, 73 million baby boomers that are at the age now where we're grappling with our own mortality. We're watching our parents get sick and die. So there's no wonder. Also, there's just been a lot of science about consciousness survival that's been very supportive of the existence of life after death.
And, you know, even so, you and I both being in the healthcare field, we even look at the revolution of dementia and Alzheimer's, and when we say that those people are not connecting with us, they may be connecting to their spirit life. You know, they may be having those thoughts and those conversations and feeling more connected to beyond versus being here. And I've heard that many times from many people, that if you just sit down and listen and connect with them on different levels, how much more is there to the world, you know?
Well, that's really interesting you should say that, because I asked Eric, who's my deceased son, through a medium, I asked him that very question, and he said, yes, people with Alzheimer's, people with other forms of dementia, they are taking little side trips to the afterlife.
Yeah.
And that's part of why they just don't seem to be grounded on the earthly plane.
Right, and I think we're also experiencing this, too, with children with autism. There's a little bit of them that is a little bit more, as I call, spiritually airborne versus being grounded to the earth. There's many times, you know, I've worked with children with autism in Scottsdale, Arizona, about 10 years ago for several years, and a parent would say, you know, see my child, don't you see it, don't you see it? And I guess being my intuitive self, I says, no, I really don't see what you're saying. I just see the child, and I just see them in their spirit life. And it was kind of this contrast of, how can we be a human on this earth and still have that spirit life? And I think really the book, you know, that Eric has shared with us, My Life After Death, will answer some of those questions.
Yes, he goes through his own death in great detail, and that was very hard for me to transcribe, I'll have to tell you, Dr. Jeanette. But then he also goes through his goodbyes. He talks about his attending his funeral and some of the new, I don't know, skills he picked up.
Right.
And then he talks about his crossing over and basically his life as a spirit in heaven, and it's extremely detailed. I will say one thing. I think that this book has all but completely healed me because, you know, I know everything about Eric now. I know he's doing great, and I know almost
right.
everything about this place he now calls home. So, you know, I don't have that mystery anymore. So it's more like I just miss him instead of grieve over him.
You know, and it's so different, too, because as many people have said that they felt that death was the end of it. And a lot of people now are realizing it's just a change of clothes, it's a change of, you know, your energy body. It's a change of different way of doing things. It's a change of belief systems, a different way of being because you're a spiritual being. And
I
think now people are so struggling with that I'm a spiritual being concept, you know. I was coming out of the ER the other day. My husband's in the ER. And I was pulled up the car, and there was this older gentleman getting out of the ambulance in front of us with the oxygen mask on. He connected eyes directly with me. And it was so interesting because you could just instantly feel his aloneness and fear. And I think if we just connect with that aloneness and fear sometimes, that answers so much about our spirit. And I'm sure, you know, Eric has spoken in his book about that, you know, about it. Connectedness of the spirit, you know, sometimes we're running around as humans and there's so much disconnect, we just don't ever connect to that spirit.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, having a cocoon, that physical body, makes us feel separated from each other, but really, you know, Jeanette, separation is just an illusion that
right.
we are connected, and human beings really thrive on connection, and we are all just part of a whole. We're all completely connected, but we need to learn how to tap back into that connection to make this world a better place. We really do.
You know, and it's so interesting. All of the discrepancies about how we're going to argue from one side and the other, there was just something on the television that said when this new pope just took over, he was on one side of the fence and all the other people were on the other side that wanted the status quo, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we look at people coming forth saying these new ideas or this new way of being or this new way of being kind and caring and loving while we are still here on the earth, you know, in this human body, we still have that resistance from those that still want to be able to believe that, you know, it's not really true.
That's true. We have a ways to go, but we're getting there.
Yeah. So can you share, Elisa, can you share a little bit about how the book got started? Because in the beginning of the book, it tells Eric's cool story about before he had all of this start. So before he took his own life, before he even thought of that, before
sure.
he was really just reveling in his life and how he got to that place.
Well, I guess until he was about 14, he was such a happy kid, so loving, very affectionate, extremely kind and compassionate to his friends. But then he started developing bipolar disorder, and he had learning disabilities and Tourette's. So his life was just miserable, and he was the target of so many bullies. Even his teachers would mock him.
Mm-hmm.
It was just horrible. And eventually he... You know, he just couldn't take it anymore. We took him to a psychologist and a psychiatrist every week. We just absolutely surrounded him with love. Ours is a very, very affectionate family. But there's only so much he can do. And he took the decision
mm-hmm.
to take his life. And I cannot tell you how devastating that is. I mean, I think, personally, to lose a child has to be the worst thing that can happen to a human being. And it was really particularly hard on me because as a physician, you know, my whole background is science, you know. So
right.
Science, you know how that is, Dr. Jeanette. They teach you that if you can not, something is real only if you can perceive it with your senses or measure mm-hmm. it with an instrument or something. And I couldn't do that when Eric was gone. And I was raised by atheists, so
right.
that didn't help. I didn't really have, an idea. I really didn't think about what happened after death, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'll tell you, I was raised Roman Catholic, and I had that side. But also, too, I also, you know, being in healthcare for over four decades now, I really have the concept, too, about saving people or fixing the people, you know. I'm sure you've come up against that all the time. Why can't we fix them? I have the tools. I have the education. Why is it that it isn't fixing? And then when we have
true.
To step back and say, I can't fix anyone, really what my tools are doing is providing the space for them to figure out how to fix themselves. And that's a big, huge concept that Eric has in his book, is that we can't fix anything. It's all about choice and free will and what we're able to do for ourselves. It's not about outside of us. It's about ourselves.
That's true. Of course, you know, he was my most important patient, and I couldn't fix him, so it was really
mm-hmm.
a struggle for me. And, you know, you're right. When you have somebody that you love that is sick, it's really easy, especially for healthcare providers or any kind of
mm-hmm.
caregiver, to look at them as a problem that needs to be solved, somebody that needs to be fixed,
mm-hmm.
instead of as a whole human being. So I struggled with that a lot. But
especially when our clients come in, and I always say that which is going to heal you is what you left at home, you know? Only what you brought to me is what you want fixed by, you know, external means, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think Eric struggled with that, you know. He was just showing outwardly, potentially, what, you know, maybe could be looked at or could be conceived of. But really what he held inside was things that we couldn't put a finger on or tap into or have a concept about.
That's true. But fortunately, things changed because, I think it was 3 days after he died, everybody was just a mess. I just can't tell you. But my atheist father, and I'll say militantly atheist father, because he was just such a mean spirited atheist, and he mocked people that believed in life after death. But he called me on the telephone, and he sounded really panicky. So I said, "What's wrong, Dad?" It said, I was sitting in my chair, reading my paper, minding my own business, and all of a sudden I look up and there's Eric standing right in front of me. I don't know what to believe. I'm so startled. So that made me think, wow, if he's able to admit that, maybe there's something to this I need to explore. And that's the beginning of my journey. That's when I started doing all my research into quantum physics and alternate dimensions and near-death experiences and the like.
And the book, again, is My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven, which is Eric's memoir from heaven. So in the book is Eric's story about what happened as he passed over, what happened and who he visited and said goodbye to just after the funeral, and also to what happened as he went through his transformation, and about heaven, about choice, spirit guides. What happens to our body? And, hey, do they have a McDonald's in heaven? You know, hey, is there a house in heaven? How do we live in heaven? Or is it just another place that looks just like where we are today? And I think Eric is really great at taking us through all of those thoughts that he has. It's really important because a lot of people do struggle with that, right?
That's right. You know, a number of readers of the book have given me feedback that they're no longer afraid of death at all. I mean, they understand that it's not the end, that it's just a transition into this alternate, really parallel dimension. And that's just so gratifying. I mean, I would hate for Eric's death to be just a tragic waste. And it seems like this book in particular has helped so many people, again, grapple with their fear of death.
Yeah, you know, I think the idea that when you die, everybody thinks they go to hell and that they're going to be burned up and how horrible and destructive that is. So people run, you know, doing their original sin and confessions and everything, you know, and mm-hmm. saying, I got to get it in before I go, you know, that kind of idea, when really they aren't even true to themselves or honest with themselves, and that really doesn't serve them very much either.
That's right. Fortunately, Eric says there is no hell, so that's good. That's sort of a human construct that was created to control the matter, basically. Now, you can create anything. You know, the whole physics principle of thought creates reality, right? You can create anything you want to, both as a human, although it takes a lot longer and a lot more effort, but as a spirit, too. So if you cross over and you think you're supposed to be in hell, you will create that reality. It won't, like, you know, be forever.
Right.
Sooner or later, you will ask for help, and you'll receive it and get out of that and cross completely over. But I just want the Roman Catholics out there to know that it's going to be okay.
So how did this book come about? Because really, it's not like you sat down and wrote the story and he was had a tape recorded in your ear. You know, I mean, this is really very detailed information.
Yeah, well, first of all, my first book, My Son in the Afterlife, Eric, I wanted to share my journey from being a hard-nosed skeptic to a believer, which took around 4 years, believe it or not, and he died almost exactly 6 years ago today. And,
oh, no.
And in that, he shares a lot about, you know, his life as a spirit and time concepts like time and God and all sorts of things. Very interesting book. But then he wanted to share his own journey. So he does in this book from moments before his death into the present. He just basically channeled through a medium his desire to do this. And this information is also channeled through a medium. The medium's name, she's so gifted, Jamie Butler. You know, it took, you know, a couple of years of regular sessions to get all the information. We had to do things like change his bad grammar. We didn't take out any of the sailor talk because, you know, that would not be Eric. You know, sometimes he would flip-flop between tenses and stuff, but the rest of it is just all him.
Goodness. And when we think about it, so many people right now, you know, I've gone through psychics, intuitives, mediums, done past life regressions. We've all gone to angel readers, stuff like that, probably for decades now. And everybody's looking for a question. Everybody's got a question, you know. I've got a question. What is this? I want to connect with this person. I want to see what they're doing. I want to make sure they're okay. And I think it's really important, as you read through the book, My Life After Death, is Eric is really saying the number one thing that is so vitally important, if you take anything from this hour or anything from the book, is that when you pass on in transition, as I call it, you are okay. And don't you think that is that one sentence is the most important thing?
No, you're so right. Hallelujah. You know, you are better than okay. You're happy and healthy. So any mental or physical illnesses that might have plagued your physical body in life is no longer there. And knowing that it's not the end and you're just like removing a suit of clothes, like you so aptly said, Dr. Jeanette, that means that we don't need to forget about our loved ones. We actually can continue to have a relationship with them, as I do with my son, Eric. And really, in many ways, my relationship with him now is, you know, it's not focused on his misery anymore. So it's much more fulfilling. It's much richer than it was before.
You know, there's many times when I've spoken with people and they would say, oh, I really miss like my husband or whatever. And I'll say, okay, what do you do about it? And they'll say, like, I sit in the chair crying. I say, why don't you sit in the chair and have a conversation with them?
Exactly.
Okay? It's in your house. Who the heck is going to give a crap whether you're sitting in your house talking to yourself or not? Get over it. You know, sit there and have a conversation. Put two cups of tea out and have a conversation. And
oh,
you
my
know
gosh,
what
that's what I do.
And at the end of the conversation, right, at the end of the conversation, don't you feel lighter? Don't you feel less in pain? Don't you feel less weighted down by suffering? You feel like you communicated. And it's so why do we think that the only time we communicate is when somebody's human body is standing in front of us. Let me tell you for sure, this human body standing in front of you, and I've done this as a test, and I would encourage everybody to do this. Stand there and talk to somebody about something they know nothing about. Well, after you get out the first three or four words, they are not listening to you at all. And you can stop, and you can stop dead in the middle of the sentence, and they won't even know any different. So if you think you're having a conversation with a human being and you can be guaranteed of that, I can guarantee you 90% of the time you're not. So why not communicate with every spirit, right?
That's right. And, you know, everybody can channel. Of course, some can do it a lot easier than others. But Erica has some great advice. First of all, like you said, Dr. Jeanette, start a conversation. Say, hey, how are you doing? And listen inside your head or just outside your ear for a response. It could be in your own voice, you know, but that doesn't mean it's not that it's you. Or it could be in your loved one's voice. When you're channeling, it seems like they're not thoughts that you construct. They just seem to come out of nowhere. Also, the phrasing might be different. Like, they might use the second person, like, you need to get the car battery checked, or you need to, instead of I need to. Eric has a good piece of advice. He says, download on iTunes or wherever, I'm sure you can get it all sorts of places, something called binaural beats.
Yes.
And play through earphones the frequencies between 14 and 16 hertz. And that will get your brainwave pattern into a pattern that is more receptive of this subtle energy. And, you know, I tried that, and it's just amazing. My mom started coming in. My deceased sister started coming in. I started seeing images. So that's worth a try. Now,
is it 1,400 or 1,600?
It's 14 to 16 hertz.
Okay.
Another thing that you can do that's really simplistic but is a good starting place is to play the hand game. Now, that's where you designate one hand as a yes. You designate the other as a no, of course. And, of course, as you can see, it's only good for yes and no questions, but it's okay. And then you put your palms and your hands a little bit apart in front of you, and you put them palms up. And you ask your yes or no question, are you okay, for example. And then you wait to discern some sort of difference in one of those palms. It could be, you know, for me, Eric, it's like he's blowing on my palm. It might be a temperature change, tingling, numbness, a pressure change, any kind of difference. Now, if you don't get anything after a while, then it's okay to say, you know, hey, make it stronger. Because some spirits are better at others than, you know, at communicating this way.
Right.
And just keep asking them to make it stronger until you are sure that you have an answer. So that's kind of a cool game.
Yeah, and it's also to not always be, hey, I want you to, I'm going to communicate with you and I want you to open up the sliding glass door. Or I'm going to communicate with you and I want you to drop that book off my desk. And it has to be the second book off my desk because the first one's too easy. So in other words, we don't want to give them commands in how to communicate with us, but we just want to feel their energy or their sense, and that's the more important. I know myself, there's a particular person that had passed on that was very, very close to me, and I would always smell cigarette smoke. Or for my grandfather, I would smell or think of cherry tobacco. So, you know, there's a lot of these different nuances that you'd be able to pick up. Sometimes people would say, my mother always made apple pie, so they would remember apple pie, right?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's science behind what you're saying. Let me just start out by saying, as many of you know, maybe all of you know, is that everything is energy, including matter. I mean, Einstein referred to matter as frozen light. So we are even made of energy, and so are our spirits. Now, every type of energy vibrates at a very unique, its own unique frequency on this long electromagnetic spectrum, where you have microwaves and ultraviolet rays and X-rays and radio waves. And we are in that tiny, tiny sliver called the visible range, very tiny. Now, when we have expectations, expectations, like thoughts and emotions and everything else, is energy too. Well, expectations vibrate at a very low frequency. And so that puts you at sort of the bottom of the range of the visible spectrum. Now, spirits vibrate at a frequency higher and outside of the visible range. So imagine how hard it is for them to lower their energy to get to the frequency of their energy, rather, to get all the way down to you with your big expectation. Same thing happens with grievers. You know, I was one of the last to get any sort of communication from Eric because I was just so broken, Dr. Jeanette. I was so depressed, and so I was way down at the bottom of the visible range. And that's why we use terms like I'm depressed, I'm down, I'm feeling low, because the frequency of our energy is so low. So, piece of advice, if you're not getting any sort of communication from your loved one, try to increase the frequency of your energy. Watch your favorite stand-up comic. Think about joyful memories. Have that delightful tea party with your deceased loved one that Dr. Jeanette's talking about, and you're more likely to get a sign. Now, I hadn't had a sign in quite a long time from Eric, and part of that's because our family's been going through a little bit of a crisis, and so my energy was vibrating at a pretty low frequency. So I kind of fussed at Eric. Hey, you know, come on. You're pranking all my blog members, communicating with them. What's wrong? What am I, chopped liver? And so yesterday, an airsoft BB, and he's done this before, appears at the ceiling and drops to the floor. And we don't even have any airsoft guns, much less airsoft BB. So it's because I finally decided to let go of my expectations. And just accept that, you know, maybe I will never get another sign from him. So he came through, fortunately.
And those are the subtle little things that you look for. I know myself, I was really struggling with just not getting signs also. And I had put a gemstone underneath my pillow. I got up in the middle of the night and put it under my pillow. And probably about 3 in the morning, I got up in the morning and I was changing the sheets on the bed. And the gemstone was there, but also a quarter with the sign of with the mountains up on it. And it's like, and I'm really like in tune with the mountains. And it was just a sign saying where my mountain energy spirits are here to pay attention, because there was no reason to have a quarter there. I don't even have change around the house. It's not something I even think about, you know. It's
Isn't
only in the
amazing?
Bottom of your Yeah, it's only like in the bottom of your purse. It's the only place you ever see money, you know, quarters or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah.
That is fascinating.
Pay attention. And I think those are the things that we get so wrapped up in our life that we might not notice these sometimes, these little subtleties.
That's true. Eric loves to prank those who read his book and also blog members. I've started a blog to vent my grief called Channeling Eric, and Eric spelled with a K, and people share their stories almost on a daily basis about how he does things that are just really not so subtle, like even appearing before him. I remember one guy from Ireland, Damien. He contacted me and said, "Your son just appeared before me." I go, "What?" Yeah, I recognized the picture from the blog. Says, "Well, what happened?" And he said, "Well," he told me, "Dude, I bet you I could tell you how far away your girlfriend is from you." And so Damien had never seen a spirit before, so he was a little startled. And he said, okay. So Eric gave him a number of kilometers. He was in Ireland, but she was all the way in Canada, so they were quite far apart. And Damien double-checked it, and he was right on.
Wow.
So sometimes they're not so subtle.
Yeah. That is so interesting, I'll tell you. So let's share a little bit about the book. So after the funeral, we talk about transition. Can you share a little bit about Eric's transition? Because sometimes we say, after my body's out there, you know, at the funeral, do I just go off and I get some wings and we're all walking around, you know, with this glorious, long, swaying blonde hair with a white gown on. Now, look, I want white, swaying blonde hair, so I'm thinking about, or
I'm putting my order in now. I want that there. But anyway.
I want a lazy boy with cup holders in it. That's what I want. I'm going to rest for a while after this life.
So share a little bit about Eric's transition. That would be wonderful.
Sure. Well, first I'll say that according to Eric, how you cross over, what that's going to look like, is going to be based on the belief systems you've created about it while you were alive. So if you're an atheist and you believe that everything's just, that's the end, then you're going to, when you die, be in blackness. And then you'll start to realize you're still having thoughts like, hey, I wonder where my dog is. And then, wait, I'm thinking. And eventually you'll ask for help and spirits you'll be at an energetic frequency enough where they can actually, intervene and help you. Some people might believe in the whole white tunnel thing. They'll get that. Eric didn't really have much of a belief system. So when he crossed over, first he was wanting to follow us home from the funeral. And, but for some reason he felt this pull, like somebody was, like he was on a fishing line being reeled in. And then he felt like, you know how you feel just as you're going to go or drop off the top of the peak of a roller coaster?
Right.
He had that feeling in his chest and stomach. And then all of a sudden he was in this big white space. Everything was white. So that's what his crossing over was like. And eventually he saw these shapeless blobs start to appear. He was a little frightened. And then a couple of them stepped forward that was clearly my deceased sister, his aunt Denise, and my mother-in-law from Norway. And so that was the initial crossing over.
And that's interesting because we always say, too, when we always want to ask the question, like my son passed over or my daughter passed over, are they with my father or are they with my grandfather? In other words, does anyone come to meet them? And the answer is that they are available there to meet them.
Yes, and your pets. Eric met our deceased dogs, and he was really amazed because he could actually understand them. It was like a telepathic communication between them that was absolutely remarkable.
And also, too, the idea that even on the earth, we are always looking for someone else to do for us or to think for us or give us the answers. Mm. Even so, when you transition, they're not going to do for you or give you the answers. It's still really all about you. They are just guiding. So as we think about our whole life and our past lives, current and future, we can just say it's all about learning experiences, but also, too, there will be guides along. In other words, I like to think of guides as sometimes those exits, that have a really big pothole and you have to back up off the exit and get back on the highway. I think of a spirit guide like that, where you have to back up on the highway because they're going to plop a big hole in the middle and say that's not the road you want to get off on. You want to get back on and get off the next one,
Yeah. Eric is a spirit guide. You can have all sorts of roles you can play or I'll say jobs that you can have in heaven as a spirit. You can be a teacher, you can be a healer, you can be a spirit guide like Eric. Eric says spirit guides are actually kind of common. They're like taxi cabs in New York City.
Yeah. That's interesting. So how does he be a spirit guide, or was that something he was all in his life? I know, we say that what we do in this life, maybe as a healer like you and I, are we going to be healers then?
Well, apparently it was his spiritual contract, a contract he designed before coming into a body, as Eric Medhus, to come to Earth, suffer greatly like he did, in order to gain the skills, like the listening skills and the compassion and other skills that he would need to become a very effective spirit guide. So that was his plan, and he was supposed to exit early. Of course, I asked him, why? Why couldn't you wait until you were 80 years old and do the same thing you're doing now? But he said he just couldn't have endured it.
And how about the idea of time? Because there is no time. I don't know about you, but a few weeks ago I noticed this. It was very, kind of shook me a little bit, which things don't usually shake me. But I was sat down one day and I turned on the television and it said Thursday on the TV guide. Mm-hmm. And I said, it's not Thursday, it's Monday. And then I looked back and I said Thursday again. I called up three people I knew. I said, what day is today? They said, it's Thursday. I said, it can't be Thursday. I only remember Monday.
You went through a time warp.
Correct. It was a total time shift, you know, and it was just totally just gone. And, you know, and Eric talks about timelessness in the book.
Yeah, it's just a human construct, and Einstein said the same thing, that we need a sense of linear time. Otherwise, we wouldn't have linear language. We wouldn't have the cause and then the effect a type setup. We wouldn't have this whole, I'll get up and eat breakfast, then I'm going to go to work.
Yeah.
And so you need linear time here, but everything is happening at the same time. In fact, all of your other lives, your incarnations, are happening at the same time, past, present, future. So there really are no past lives, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They're all just happening at once.
And, you know, the concept even, you know, when you go to sleep and you feel like you're fighting with ninjas or, you know, you're riding on some kind of horse going down this cobblestone street, you know, those could be portions and parts of your past life, just it's just coming into freeze frame now, you know.
That's true.
The
they
same
can bleed
different
through.
Pieces.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's kind of a bleed through, he calls it.
Yeah. Interesting. Can you share what he talks about, a past life? People say, I don't have a past life. That's a new age concept, and they need to go away. That's not really true.
Oh, gosh. I think anybody who questions it should read Carol Bowman's book, Children's Past Lives, because it's an accounting of Ian Stevenson's work. Ian Stevenson is a scientist that set out to disprove the
mm-hmm.
existence of past lives. And so he had very highly controlled studies in different places. I can't remember, Lebanon and maybe India, where he would interview children, and the parents were,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't work if the parents actually believed in past lives. They had to have been only in that little village, you know, for their entire life, et cetera. And all these kids are having accounts like, hey, you want to come see my grave? And, you know, this is my wife's grave. And, that, you know, so the evidence is just absolutely remarkable. But people do have a hard time, you know, dovetailing this into the concept of timelessness. And here's how Eric describes it. He uses a wagon wheel as an analogy. Your soul, your higher self, is in the hub, right?
Right.
And all of your incarnations are the spokes. So you're living a life in the 1800s in France, and when you die, your soul recedes back into its higher self, and another tendril comes down to live another life, maybe in the year 2047, etc. So you're living all these lives, and as the wheel turns, it creates this track in the mud. That's your linear timeline.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, have you noticed any times you're yourself where you say, I've been here before, I've sensed something else? Have you ever noticed that?
Sure. Sure, and phobias too. You know, they can be a bleed through from another life. Like a person who's mm-hmm. afraid of heights, they might be in a mm-hmm. Be tapping into a life where they fell off a cliff, for example.
Hmm. Interesting. You know, I came back to Louisiana in 2004, and in 2005, no, maybe 2009, something around there. I was walking down this one street in the French Quarter, and for some reason, within an instant, my consciousness went somewhere else, and I heard clop, 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 clop. You know, the horses going on the cobblestones?
Mm.
There was no one else on the street but me. Heard clop, 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 clop in my senses, and I was going to the gemstone store, which I'd never been to, And I walked in, and they all looked at me like with these big bug eyes, and I'm going, oh, okay, that's whatever. And I just kind of like dismissed it. But it's definitely a place where I had been many centuries or whatever ago, you know. So I think to give importance to that. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't you think to give importance to that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you know, if you don't believe in these other incarnations, it's just you're not looking at the complete you. You are so much more than the person that is living this current life. And the reason we're living all these lives is to try to learn, or actually relearn, I'll say, so that all this information can be uploaded to the higher self and then eventually the entire collective of which we are a part.
And it's all about all of the experiences in the different lives, and whether you've learned something or not learned something, or you've had a challenge, or you may have experienced something, you know, that, as you said, those are the collective little pieces of the puzzle, as I think I would see it.
Yeah, Eric talks about the human experience a lot in the first book, My Son and the Afterlife, and he uses another analogy. He loves analogies, a Brownian analogy. First of all, when you're in spirit, you can understand a concept of cold, for example, but you have to have the experiential component. You have to experience hot in order to really understand it. So in spirit, you might read a recipe about brownies, how to make brownies, and you might see an image of it, but you have to come to earth, you know, mix up the ingredients, get batter all over your clothes. I'd probably get it in my hair. Then you have to, you know, put it in the pan, stick it in the oven, burn your fingers, take it out, let it cool down, ice it, and then take a bite. That's when you truly know what a brownie is. And that's what the human experience is all about. In particular, it's about learning different aspects of love, different facets of love. So you might, for example, decide you want to learn about forgiveness, an aspect of love. So you might ask one of your soul buddies, hey, look, can we incarnate together? And I want to learn about forgiveness, so do you mind betraying me? So that's how the human experience works. It's all based on contrast.
And I'll tell you, a lot of people go through life saying, I only love my wife. I hate that guy down the corner. And you know, those people over there, I'll never work with them. And my job really sucks. And they go through a life with all of this blah, blah, blah mantra, you know, and kind of they're in that rebellion stage where they're not able to step back and say this might be a learning experience. So they will continue to get those type of experiences until potentially they may learn it. So some people will say, why does it always happen to me? Well, what is the lesson to be learned? Don't look at what is happening. Look at what the lesson to be learned might be. Look at it from a different side instead of constantly burrowing down that same hole. Looks like a duck, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck kind of idea. Well, let's say, hey, ducks might fly, so I'm going to look at it from above. Let's look at what the wings are teaching me. In other words, transition that story to be something else. Because when you can look at it from the other side, sometimes you'll find out something else.
Yeah, so much is about just a tweaking of a perspective. And it's interesting you talk about it as you do, because Eric says the same thing. It's almost like sometimes you have to rise above your life and look at it like you're a chess player watching the moves, instead of just being on the board as a pawn that's being shoved from one square to the next. So it takes a little while, but if you're just objective, you know, and look at your life and look at where you're suffering and realize that you're only suffering because you don't see the lesson in your struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were able to see the lesson and the value behind it, then you can embrace that adversity and then let it go.
Yeah, and it doesn't – now, here's one key concept, too, is that when we say you can embrace it and let it go, what you could be letting go is the suffering and the pain of it, but the situation doesn't always have to change. When people say, well, I'm afraid to let it go because I don't want my husband to leave, I'm afraid to let it go because I don't want my job to leave, it's just your perception of that. suffering that would be let go. And if the other follows, that's different. But really, the step and the goal is to change your perception of that.
That's so true. Resisting is what causes suffering. And when you resist seeing the lesson in it or the value of it, then that's just going to make your suffering persist.
Yeah.
For example, I'll give you an example. In my childhood, I suffered a lot of child abuse. I'm talking about skull fractures and
mm-hmm.
Homelessness and all sorts of, running away to become homeless. And so it was really difficult. And I finally decided to step back and see what was the value in that. And there actually was a lot of value. For example, I learned to become assertive. I learned to become more compassionate. I learned what mother not to be and what parent
right.
not to be. And so I'm so grateful, because if I had not gone through that, I don't think I would have liked the person I would have become. I really don't.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think a lot of this abuse that we say, we're quickly pointing fingers. I know myself had gone through a lot also, and very similar. And as we look at it as adults, we say, we now have the concepts to be able to change that, because we say as grandparents, we don't want to continue that pattern on, to our children. Or as parents, we don't want to continue that on to our children. So we're really starting to learn that we are responsible in self-respect and self-responsibility for that which I call spew on others or impact on others. It's really about being aware of what you are, who you are, and what you are doing and how you're influencing others.
Yeah, making sure you still hold on to your power, because you have that power. Yeah. And how refreshing is it to be just how you're describing, Dr. Jeanette, that you are responsible for your life instead of just handing the reins to somebody else and becoming a victim. It's so much nicer to be the chess player instead of the pawn.
Sometimes people will say, I'll say, how was your day? And they will say, oh, it was sad. And I'll say, okay, what do you mean? Well, it's the depression. It makes me sad. And I went, oh, okay. And then, you would ask them questions, and they would talk, and they would say, oh, my gosh, well, so-and-so starts doing this, that, and the other. And I said, well, what do you do? And then they'll say their part in it. And I said, what if you just stopped the process and said, stop, don't engage? And I try to teach that word all the time, don't engage, don't engage, don't engage, because that's really how we can learn some of the things that Eric is talking about in his book. Is when you don't engage, you can see it sometimes from the other side. Let it play out as a play in front of you and say, where was my marker there? How is it happening? Because as he said, what you believe before is what will play out after,
That's so true. Gosh, you sound just so, you and Eric have such similar philosophies. It's uncanny.
I think I've been there enough times, goodness.
I think so.
I can remember how many times. there have been times where I have said to people when I get up in the morning, and I'm older, I'm almost 60, and if you remember old cartoons, they would have the body sit up first and then another body would sit up second. And I physically said, I went to sit up and I could feel that the rest of my body was still back there and it was tethering me. I had to wait until it joined my other body so I could get out of bed.
Wow.
And when we spoke about it, they're like, oh, she's got three heads on today again. What are we going to do, But, and I think it's just about being light about it, too. I mean, even what Erica said in his book or what I say now on the radio is, okay, it just eases. And see, you and I laugh. It's light. It's not dragging us into the sewer all the time,
That's right.
Believe me, I've been dragged in the sewer enough time. I can tell you the color of hell. I can tell you how many times it takes a vacuum to pull it through the black hole, because I've been there so many times. But then you can also, too, after Hurricane Katrina, when we stayed here and got flooded in, we drove down the street, and I said to my husband, oh, my gosh, I closed my eyes and I said, it's gray. it's waving like dust and moss in the air. He says, what the heck are you talking about? I says, there's death and darkness everywhere, and I had to get out of there, you know.
Yeah.
But then you turn around, and I'll walk down the street today, and I'll look up, I'll stumble because I'm looking up at the sky at the cool clouds, you know. So it's just about being present wherever you are, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. That's our nature. Our nature is to be in joy. You know, it's not to be heavy.
Yeah, and it's no matter where you are. You know, I'm sure you've seen this with people, let's say when they have cancer. And you can line up 100 people and give them different therapies and drugs or give them spiritual help or hands-on help or whatever that is. And really, whatever that individual is needing to fit that piece of their soul or spirit from that menage of all of that stuff is what they pick. But some people we see, you know, they go on and on and on, and they're sicker, sicker, sicker. It's because they haven't recognized that they have an option to pick. But not only that, they haven't chosen to pick, you know.
That's right. Yeah, you have to make that choice.
Yeah, and I think Eric has really stepped up. He really gave back to the world with this book. I mean, how many people would say, okay, I had those questions, but I'm not real sure about it. And I think Eric's book, you know, the work you and Eric have done is so vitally important. I can't think of anyone that wouldn't be like, my gosh, it just eased my conscience. It eased my heart. I'm not so scared. And I think it's really a help.
Yeah, you know, death is such an unknown for people, you know. They don't know because they don't see. You know, we don't see, well, most of us don't see spirits. And so we think, well, there's nothing afterwards. But think about this. We can't see, you know, ultraviolet waves, but we know they exist. So we just have to open our minds that, you know, there's science behind this. Spirits do exist. The afterlife does exist. That dimension where Eric is does exist. And I think we're right now on the bleeding edge of things. So, well, let me just put it at give you Arthur Schopenhauer's famous quote about truth. Truth goes through three phases. First, it's ridiculed. I get a lot of that.
Yes.
Then it's scorned. Get a lot of that.
Yeah.
But eventually, it's accepted as self-evident. And I think that you and I are on the bleeding edge of spirituality, going through those phases of truth, and eventually, you know, we'll get there. And you're bringing that truth to so many people. Which is just really a godsend. You're a trailblazer doing what you do.
Well, I think both of us, too, have recognized that if, you know, we look back at, you know, it drives me crazy on social media that everybody's putting all of these quotes with someone else's name on the bottom. And it's like, gosh, does anybody write anything original anymore? You know what I mean? Yeah, because we're so afraid to expose our vulnerability or expose our heart and soul that we walk around with this big shield out, you know? And that's where our truth is coming forth, and I think a lot of people are starting to melt that away.
Yeah, I hope so. I think so. I really do.
Well, I think that, you know, Eric, this book is absolutely wonderful. I would, you know, it would be the best book ever. And if you are anybody to read it, I think that kids could read it. I think college students, definitely in hospice. I think nursing homes. Hey, everybody should have one for Christmas, you know. Pass it around the family. You know, I don't know about you, but every time I get a book, I fold down the pages, and I did with this. Fold down the pages, you know, star this, circle that, write your notes in the side. Then hand it off to a family member.
Mm-hmm.
Have them do the same thing. Have it go around the whole family. And then, you know, next year when it comes to Christmas time, open it up and say, my gosh, look at what I wrote in there, you know.
Mm.
And everybody could share all their thoughts and how that would be really wonderful instead of worrying about when someone's in the ER being one of those helicopter family members who are buzzing in, save him, save him, save him. He's got an insurance card and that's what I demand, you know. When really this is what we're talking about. This is the essence. It's not about how much can you spend on my Medicare dollar because, you know, I deserve it. You better fix me fast, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is this is what humanity has been searching for, well, since humans existed, is this whole concept of what is this it? Is that it? Mm-hmm. What happens after I die? And what's the point of life if this is it? So.
Well, goodness, Dr. Lisa, could you share how this might have changed you and your and even in your healthcare practice, or how you relate to others? Because I think sometimes we go, oh, look, healthcare has just got to go obliterate itself someday. Because most of them are so far-fetched, they're just way in the wheelhouse of they're just going to have to go that way. Because they don't get it, you know. They're just...
No.
You know, and well, I think it has changed us.
Yeah, you know, it's like the people who used to think the earth was flat, you know. And, oh, boy, they let the person who said it was round have it. But guess mm-hmm. what? The world is definitely round. So, you know, I have become a round earth believer. And, you know, I get a different sense of the preciousness of the human experience now. I have a broader awareness of things, of life and beyond. And, you know, I also understand that I can continue to have a relationship with any of my loved ones and will.
Mm-hmm. And it's totally, it just makes life a bit lighter, don't you think?
Oh, yes. We're eternal beings. What the heck's the worst that can happen to us, huh?
Yeah, really. I mean, I have this idea of a bucket list. I said to somebody the other day, I said, I don't need a bucket list. If you told me today I would be dead tomorrow, I'd be like, okay, so I'm going to go watch TV, see you later, and I want to have some potato chips. You know, it's like, it doesn't faze me, I guess. And to me, it just is. And I think that's what the book is all about. And I'm sure, you know, eventually people will come over and say, what is that all about? And that's really the purpose of this show. So I really thank you for coming on. Can you share a little bit about, you have a blog, your information, your website, and your book? That would be great.
Sure. The blog is www.channelingeric.com, but Eric spelled with a K. It's a very tight-knit group. We just have all sorts of fun, and Eric shares so much through mediums about death, the afterlife, life of the spirit, different things regarding the human experience, even weird fringy stuff that he elucidates about, like Bigfoot, like what Bigfoot is and things like that. So we have a lot of fun with the blog. And then my book, or his book, I'll say, I'm just a secretary that's a terrible typist. The book you can get anywhere, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, brick and mortar places, etc. So...
Well, I really thank you for coming on, and I'll tell you what, before we even started the show, like when you and I, our voices connected, I saw the word happy birthday, so, and that's when you went on, and you said it was 6 years?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. That's his birthing out day, I guess we'll say.
Yep.
Interesting.
It's marking the day.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was a real pleasure to have you with us.
Likewise.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about the book, My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven, it is Eric Medhus, with Dr. Elisa Medhus. And I'll tell you, this book, please get it. It is an absolute read. It's definitely light. It's something that will ease your conscience, and you won't feel like that you've got this hole in you that you just can't. You just can't get to. You just can't touch. You just can't. It's like this ache that you just can't do anything with. There's a sense of something that's out there. It's really something that will help heal you. So thank you so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you with us. Please do check out the link for the book, My Life After Death, on the bottom of today's show page. And have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health,
we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.